WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's March 31st. Statistics show 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually assaulted before reaching age 18. On this episode of Redux, find out what's being done here on the First Coast to help survivors, as well as what the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office is doing about thousands of untested rape kits as we look ahead to Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Also, we'll take a closer look at JEA's recent announcement of its coal plant closure, as well as what a group of Jacksonville youth are doing to help city officials and their peers see the light. And finally, we'll bring you a piece about getting back to nature in St. Augustine. But first, help us celebrate our birthday. Here's how.
I've taught you much, my little droogies.
I want you to think back to 1972. Richard Nixon was president, A Clockwork Orange was in movie theaters, and here in Jacksonville, a brand new radio station went on the air. WJCT has served the First Coast for the past 45 years, and we're still going strong, thanks to listeners like you. You can support our news programming, independent music, and community outreach by becoming a sustainer at WJCT.org.
Florida legislature's health budget chiefs are proposing deep cuts to the state's largest spending priority, healthcare, and that includes large decreases to hospital funding. Jacksonville's UF Health could be one of the hardest hit because it treats a large number of low-income patients. But as WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, the Senate's budget leader is confident the cuts will be offset with the renewal of a federal program covering the costs of indigent healthcare.
Hospitals stand to lose big under both budget proposals, but would be particularly vulnerable to the House's, which cuts their state Medicaid payments by $240 million. The loss would double, too, because the federal government matches those funds. The Senate's hospital budget is less draconian, around $100 million in cuts, twice that counting the federal match. But Senate Health Budget Chairwoman Anna Terraflores tried to hedge hospital panic with the possibility of renewing a program discontinued by former President Barack Obama.
The good news is one of the policy decisions that we're promoting and working with our hospital friends from across the state is working with the federal government on funding for the low-income pool. The federal government seems to be on a faster track and process to be able to have that funding made available.
The low-income pool was a pot of money both federal and state governments and hospitals contributed to in order to cover the cost of uninsured hospital visits. Originally, state and local governments put in $1 billion and the feds matched it. But after Florida rejected Medicaid expansion as part of the Affordable Care Act, the Obama administration phased out its portion to $600 million, then just $300 million, until its contribution evaporated this year. The impending loss of that federal cash loomed large last year at the First Coast Legislative Delegation meeting, where UF Health CEO Russ Armistead warned lawmakers his hospital, which treats a large number of poor and uninsured patients, was in danger of shuttering.
Those are the funds that we use to provide care and to keep the doors open. If we were to, in rough numbers, we were saving about $60 million a year from that program, and last year I said I made 10, I'll lose 50. That would take us into bankruptcy.
The House's budget doesn't mention LIP at all. But Flores and other senators say the Trump administration is playing ball and should renew the program within this year's budget cycle. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Now, Students in Jacksonville's Lehigh leadership class met with State Attorney Melissa Nelson earlier this past week. As WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride reports, the students for the past 2 years have been meeting with city leaders about juvenile justice reform.
On Tuesday, 11 Lee High School boys are around a table with Nelson and several of her attorneys. Their teacher, Amy Donofrio, says there's a lot of planning before these meetings.
They want officials to feel some of the feelings that they've experienced and that their loved ones have experienced so they can realize the weight of some of the decisions being made.
Some students said making money illegally or robbery could be the only option for teens who need to help their families. And once kids have a record, it can be a cycle. An attorney responded saying students can't justify those actions with excuses, but Donofrio says adults need to own when they've let down young people.
And so I think as long as officials are willing to come to the table and have that discussion and that it's okay for us to push back against each other a little bit, then progress is being made and I have a lot of hope for where that can go.
Nelson and her colleagues say with any juvenile arrested, the office looks into the root causes of the crime, and that affects how they're charged. One of their old classmates who was arrested on an armed robbery charge will be tried as a juvenile, no felony, for example.
It was relieving to hear.
11th grader Tyree King used to have class with him. But he says this class has caused him to resist a lot of peer pressure. He says his friends asked him to help with a home invasion once, but he declined. And he says he's even influenced them to rethink breaking the law.
Me talking to them, it got them out of doing that. And we did something else. We just went to play basketball. So my voice really can change a lot of people.
It's one reason Nelson and her team are asking the students to help with their juvenile diversion programs. She also asked the students to attend a dialogue on race and trust between law enforcement and the community being led by the FBI. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
And now, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. In a ceremony at City Hall earlier this week, Mayor Lenny Curry issued this call to action.
Prevention requires addressing the root causes and social norms that allow sexual violence to exist. Prevention is possible when everyone gets involved.
Curry went on to say, 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually assaulted before reaching age 18, and 1 in 5 women and 1 in 16 men will be targets of sexual assault in college. But those numbers only tell a fraction of the story.
I would say, if anything, that number is underreported. It is such an intimate crime, it's very difficult for people to make that report. And I think the important thing is that people recognize that it is a crime, and it's very difficult for folks to come forward and say, this has happened to me.
That was Teresa Miles, the executive director of the Women's Center, which is the only certified rape crisis center for Duval, Baker, and Nassau counties. Miles, who along with board president Lisa Everly, were on First Coast Connect earlier this week and said, of all things, this past presidential election helped spark conversation about the often taboo subject matter of sexual assault. Everly explains.
So often what happens is, and it can happen as early as childhood, and a woman doesn't find her voice until significantly after the event. And we saw a lot of that after the political discussion that occurred last year, and women started coming forward once they heard other women claiming that they had, you know, had this experience. And that whole discussion about sexual assault really helped to bring women, even in Jacksonville, out of silence. And because of that, we saw a dramatic increase in the number of calls we were receiving to our hotline. We receive over 50 calls each day to our sexual assault hotline.
Everly discussed her own sexual assault and the stigma that many survivors experience.
Anytime a woman comes forward publicly in courage and talks about her sexual assault, it does have that effect of emboldening other women to find their voice. I'm an example of that. I was raped at 16, and it wasn't until I was in my 50s hearing a woman who looked very much like me talking about her lived experience that I found my voice. And to see someone who was a professional up on stage talking about what had happened to her at a very young age made me realize that I could, too, speak about it without shame, because I think that's a big issue for women. At least back in my day, and I don't think it's changed that much, a woman was blamed, in effect, if there was any alcohol involved, if she was wearing a certain type of clothing, if she was out alone after dark.
In recognition of Sexual Assault Awareness Month, there will be a stage reading to benefit the center's Nassau County Division. The reading is called You Don't Know Me, and it's a reading of a letter written by the woman sexually assaulted by Brock Turner, the college student who assaulted her on the campus of Stanford University. He was sentenced to prison but released in September after serving just 3 months. Local writer Diana Herman put the letter in script form.
After reading the letter, I felt compelled to stage it. I had to do something with her words. They are so powerful. Her imagery as well. She shares the before, the during, the after trial, the sentencing. But we hear her pain, her anger, her frustration, but it's her strength that, and how she transcended her ordeal, taking back the power after being helpless for so long, that stayed with me. I just couldn't let it be, so I felt I needed to do something with it.
You Don't Know Me will be performed at the Amelia Community Theater Friday and Saturday. More information can be found on our website, wjctnews.org. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office no longer has a backlog of rape kits to be sent in for testing, which is a different story than 2 years ago when nearly 2,000 untested kits were waiting on the shelf. Rape kits contain hair, fiber, DNA, and other physical evidence collected during medical exams of sexual assault victims. Processing that evidence can cost more than $1,000 per kit. Lieutenant Sharon Scott supervises JSO's Sexual Assault Cold Case Unit, which received federal funds to clear up the backlog.
We took and sent every single kit to be tested. So when the kit comes back with a confirmed DNA hit, then we compare that to see if that person was already arrested.
If not, she says, the DNA is checked against samples in the state and federal databases. Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams says eliminating the backlog means deputies can now concentrate on the 400 new sexual assault cases they've already received this year.
Many of those have kits, obviously. So we'll just continue to stay focused on that and make sure they get tested, you know, during the appropriate time windows that will help us obviously abort cases and build cases against perpetrators.
A 2016 law gives police 30 days to submit rape kits for analysis and gives labs 3 months to complete them. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement reports it's processed more than 2,300 rape kits since late 2015. The remaining 4,300 backlog kits should be processed by June of 2019. Up next,
we played outside. We built forts. We ran around in the woods. And people in general have lost that experience.
Find out how to get back in touch with nature while taking in some sights in St. Augustine. But first, JEA recently announced it will close a coal-fired power plant on Jacksonville's north side, which came online in the late 1980s. With its closure, about 200 people will lose their jobs. In this business brief, analyst John Bird tells WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo the plant's closure is not surprising, especially in today's energy climate.
John, you're not surprised by this.
I'm not. If you've been paying attention to what's going on with electric power generation over the last several years, coal-fired plants are closing all over the place. Just last week, a couple of plants they announced in Dayton, Ohio, where they practically mine coal in Dayton, Ohio, they're going to close their coal plants. They're just no longer economically viable.
Is that because of the Obama administration's regulations?
No, it's not. It's really just simple economics. Coal is being replaced by natural gas because natural gas is just super abundant right now in this country, and it will be for years to come. All that fracking of shale rock that we've been hearing about has produced this superabundance of natural gas, and it's cheaper, it's cleaner. And it's giving electric ratepayers across the country a real break on costs. It's 20% cheaper to burn than coal and a lot easier on your lungs. In fact, this natural gas now produces more electricity across the country than coal does. It's about 34% from natural gas compared to 30% from coal. 10 years ago, coal produced 50% of our electricity. And that trend of natural gas just surging ahead, it's not going to slow down.
It's interesting in this climate that President Trump is promising at least coal workers that they're going to get more jobs back. Is that really viable right now?
Nobody in the industry is talking about another coal boom. as I said, this superabundance of natural gas is really killing the coal industry. There is one possible thing in China, India, where they're really still industrializing at a great rate. They're going to need coal. There may be a bigger market for American coal there, but it's not going to be enough. It's not going to be what it has been here in the past.
So looking again at this JEA plant in Jacksonville, are there any other factors that contributed specifically to its closure?
We're witnessing the results of this massive energy conservation effort that we've had. It used to be that electric utility industry, they could just plug in, the electric use would rise by 3% a year. It was really like clockwork for decades that happened. In Jacksonville, that all stopped in 2007. In fact, you know, there are 100,000 more people living here now than in 2007. But as a city, we're using 10% less electricity than we were then. It's all those efficient appliances that are in our homes, energy efficient buildings that have come online. It's just had a huge impact on our electricity consumption.
Why does that make this coal plant less needed?
Because there's less need overall for electricity generation. There's no longer that built-in increase in demand that ruled the electric utility industry for decades. They're trying to figure out how do they deal with just keeping a level or even declining electricity need. And obviously turning to a fuel that's cleaner and cheaper looks like a real winner here and across the country.
That's WJCT business analyst John Burr talking about the closure of a JEA coal-fired power plant in the next 9 months here in Jacksonville. I'm WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo.
And finally, the St. Augustine Aquarium is about to expand with a zipline attraction coming next month. We sent our intern Serena Summerfield to the recently opened park to bring you this report.
That's the sound of workers testing the new zipline at the St. Augustine Aquarium. It's tucked away next to a Courtyard Marriott Hotel on State Road 16. On a recent day, crews are putting the finishing touches on what will be called the Zipstream Canopy Adventure, the last part of Phase 1 for the park that opened in December. Zipstream co-owner Don Stock says the zipline should be open in late April.
When we were kids, we played outside. We built forts. We ran around in the woods. And people in general have lost that experience. And part of what the Zipstream brand is about is getting people out of those synthetic environments and back into the natural world.
Stock says visitors can take guided tours and zip over the aquarium Shark and Ray Cove and into the protected wetlands at the back of the property. He says with 7 zip lines, 4 footbridges, and 2 towers, the experience lasts about an hour and a half. But for now, guests can visit the aquarium to snorkel with Florida reef fish and hand feed sharks. Serena Summerfield, WJCT News.
And that's our show. For more on the stories you heard today, visit our Redux page at wjctnews.org. Also, make sure to never miss an episode by subscribing to this program wherever you download podcasts. And for the remainder of this month, which at the time this podcast airs is exactly one day, share with a friend, coworker, family member, or whomever your love of podcasts. If they don't know how to listen, they're in luck. We have a step-by-step tutorial available on our WJCT Jax Facebook page, as well as our WJCT YouTube page. Thanks for spreading the word.